The following podcast is a part of the Spin Studio Network.
I was raised a Jehovah's Witness, so very, very religious and strict. I got married when I was 17, which most people just freak out about. Yeah. I had my first baby at 18, second at 19, and I was a single mum by the time I was 21.
Just a quick trigger warning before we get into today's episode. We do discuss topics around sexual assault, domestic violence, PTSD, and mental health. If you do need support, please contact Lifeline on 13 11 14. Hello, Sunshine, and welcome to She Was the Fire. It's time to stop dancing in the dark. Let's light your fire and ignite your spark. I'm your host, Courtney Mangan, and thank you for tuning in to episode 8 of season 3. Today, I have another guest who we'll be speaking with on a range of topics today. We go over like a whole bunch of stuff. We go over like sexual empowerment, growing up religious, you know, living life in the public eye, heartbreak, dating, a whole bunch of stuff. But before we get into it, make sure that you follow me on Instagram at Courtney Mangan and tag me in your stories if you're listening. And don't forget to rate and review if you haven't done already. All right, today's guest is one you probably already know. She has over 530,000 followers on Instagram. She's an author, a nutritionist, a PT, an NLP practitioner, and she has her own podcast, Flourish and Fulfilled, which I'm the producer of. Sophie Guidolin is known for her authentic approach to social media and in sharing all of her highs and lows with her audience. So similar to me in that we both show up like quite vulnerably online. So from heartbreak and mental health struggles to opening up about personal medical issues and the not so pretty side of parenting, Sophie shares it all. And in doing so, she helps women all over the world live more confidently and authentic lives too. So similar mission there for both of us. And we go much more into what Sophie is about in this episode, but I will let her speak for herself. So let's bring in Sophie. Welcome, Sophie.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
So excited to have you here. We actually just recorded Sophie's podcast as well. Like I was a guest. We're just doing like a little
tag team.
Different topic this time around though. All right. So with every guest, before we get started, I always start with your fire starter song. So the song that like gets you amped up. I know you're big on music. So what have you got?
I am so big on music. So I have two and I can't narrow it down. Okay. I'm really sorry.
I'll allow it.
So either Alicia Keys, This Girl Is On Fire, or...
Oh, I love that.
I won't sing it for you, but and before I am about to squat or deadlift, it's always 0 to 100 by Drake. Shout out to the bitches I ain't holding down the set. All up in my phone looking at pictures from the other night. She gonna be upset if she keeps scrolling to the left, dog. She gonna see some shit. Okay. So there's a big difference there.
Difference. Yes, very nice. And mine this week is Came Here for Love by Ella Eyre. I think that's how you say her name. Anyway, and Sigala. So. Watching a lot of Love Island, and that was like a song on it. So I was like, I love that.
Banger.
All right, let's ignite today's topic. So we're going to be talking about a whole bunch of stuff today. Obviously went into that in the intro, but we'll just sort of kick it off as I do with every guest about how Sophie and I know each other. So I guess it's just through this podcast, right?
Yeah, Quartz is my producer, Quartz, for my potty, which is amazing. And I'm so, so thankful for the opportunity to be able to come in and record here each week. So yeah.
Yeah, so obviously Sophie's been like a Gold Coast person for a long time. I've like through social known of you for many years, but yeah, when we were choosing like new people who we thought would be good for podcasts, we thought that, you know, how open and vulnerable you are online is like really good for podcasts because someone needs to be able to talk for like an hour straight.
And I can do that.
Exactly.
I can sink ships. I think I still remember like coming in and Sam being like, well, I don't think you got a problem coming in and talking. I was like, oh, okay.
No, that's not a problem. We've had people that have an issue, but you were definitely not one of them. All right. So tell us, let's get some background on Sophie. So tell us about like your life growing up and to where you are today. Just give us an overview of everything.
Oh, God. Overviews are very hard for me. So growing up, I was raised a Jehovah's Witness, so very, very religious and strict. I got married when I was 17, which most people just freak out about. Yeah. I had my first baby at 18, second at 19. And I was a single mum by the time I was 21. I didn't really know what I wanted to do or be. And I was studying psychology as I was raising the boys. And I just mentally struggled to be able to disconnect from other people to myself. I am such an empath that I take on everyone else's shit and can't compartmentalize and defer to nutrition. And that's kind of just like,
I'm getting away from it.
Too much. I actually had gestational diabetes with Kai and I put on so much weight when I was pregnant with him. And I ended up being left with 25 kilos overweight after having him. So I was 78 kilos postpartum, needed to lose the weight and thought, why not educate myself in nutrition? Started going to the gym and just fell in love with it. I had a trainer come up to me in the gym and said, you should do a fitness comp. And I was like, no, thank you, not for me. And he was like, I'll train you for free. Me being a single mom working two jobs and studying, that was pretty bloody appealing. So let him train me for free and did this comp basically in exchange.
That's so weird. It just happened like out of the blue in the middle of the gym.
It was. Must have thought,
is it like, obviously you know a lot about this comp stuff. Is there like certain body types that work better for it? Did he see your body type and go, that's going to lean better towards being lean?
I was already working in the modeling industry.
Okay.
So I ran a modeling agency in Adelaide. That was one of my jobs. My second job was that I was marketing manager for a nightclub.
Okay.
So I was working days in the agency and nights at the nightclub.
Wow.
And so, yeah. And so he knew.
And kids.
And study. So I was just like, it was all a lot. But I think for him, he knew that I'd be able to do catwalk because I've taught deportment. So he knew that if he could get me into shape, I would be able to do well. And I did. I won six of the shows in that season. And then the rest is kind of history when it comes to my fitness career. I continued competing for 7 years and turned IFBB pro when my twins were 12 months old. So I met Nathan when the boys were 2 and 3, moved up to the Gold Coast from Adelaide and still continued in the fitness industry. Went on and found that so many women I could help with nutrition and training, but then they would go and self-sabotage. And that's where my NLP and mindset stuff really came into practice because I just couldn't figure out why women were still not reaching their goals or their potential when they had all of their tools in front of them. And so there was this missing component in regards to their self-worth and self-limiting beliefs from nutrition and training versus what they actually wanted. And so that's when I started Flourish and Fulfilled and bringing in that mindset component as well. And that kind of brings you up, I guess, to scratch in a very overview way.
Tell us just for the listeners, what is NLP?
NLP is neuro-linguistic programming. So it is essentially reprogramming behavior patterns of your brain from our imprint years. So our imprint years are our 0 to 7 years, and that's when most of our core self-belief and values are formed.
And you're obviously trained in that. So
yes, correct.
Excellent. All right. That was a nice little overview there. Love that. You basically had lived like a whole life by the
so
time you were 21.
So many lives.
Crazy.
Even now I'm just like, I think I shared a quote the other day and it was like, there's so many people to come into your life that you don't even know yet, and how special and amazing that is that we are going to have so many more people come in that we're going to have these beautiful connections with.
That's nice.
Random. Great chat.
Okay, so let's take it back. Talk to me a little bit about what is like a bit more about like the Jehovah's Witness religion, because I don't think like a lot of people exactly know what it is.
No, and I think there's probably a lot of myths out there. Like every time I say to somebody that I was raised a Jehovah's Witness, they're like, oh, you're not allowed to do X, Y, Z. And I definitely don't think, I think there's a lot of misconceptions. I never went without growing up. I definitely don't feel like it was a huge negative for me, but I do think that there's so many restrictions. And I think that is basically what religion is.
Yeah.
It is a very fear-driven a way to live, because if you don't do something, X, Y, Z will happen.
Yes. To hell forever.
Yeah. And I think that, for me growing up as a Jehovah's Witness, my life was very, I don't like using the term controlled, and I know my mum will listen to this episode, very, very, restricted.
Okay.
I wasn't allowed to go to any friends' houses. I never had a birthday party. I didn't celebrate Christmas. We didn't swear. We went to, so Jehovah's Witnesses have kingdom halls instead of churches, which was 3 days per week. And essentially you dedicate your life to sharing the Jehovah's Witness philosophy or story, which is the path that they teach in the Bible. So it comes from a good place, and I don't want anyone to ever be like, ooh, you know how there's always those memes or memes, Memes.
It's like GIF or GIF, who knows?
And they're like, someone knocks on the door and Jehovah's Witnesses are there. I'm always like, what is their intention behind it? And their intention is always that they are doing a kind act for other people or humanity. And like even moving up here, I moved up here with no, I didn't know anyone. And the Jehovah's Witnesses came and like mowed my grass and dropped me flowers. And like, so there's, they're a very, community. Very beautiful people. And funnily enough as well, I seem to like attract them in because like my old PA was a, like raised a Jehovah's Witness. My photographer is a Jehovah's Witness. Like so many people that you would not even realize are Jehovah's Witnesses.
But it is based in like similar to like Christians, like they believe in God.
They believe in God. They believe that Jesus is God's son. They believe in dedicating your life to that worship, and most of my best friends growing up are still Jehovah's Witnesses now.
But it's not about celebrating milestones or like Christmas. Or you don't do any of that stuff.
So
do
the
you?
Reason,
like the birth of Christ,
there's,
or like
yeah,
kind of
there's a few things behind that. So the reason they don't celebrate birthdays is because you should celebrate every single day that you're alive, rather than it just being your birthday. So that's why I say I don't feel like I ever missed out. My parents always gave me the best of the best. I had a very beautiful childhood in regards to that aspect. When it comes to Christmas, in the Bible, it actually states that Jesus was born in like April. So they celebrate it as the memorial rather than Christmas. So it's kind of just different.
Yeah. So many religions are all based in like a similar kind of thing.
Yeah.
So tell me, how is your relationship or connection with that religion changed over the years?
I think for me growing up, it was more, I don't want to use the term forced, but as a child, it's like you do what your parents tell you. And so for me, it was very much that I was raised a Jehovah's Witness and that's what I am. Until I realized that I'm 21, I'm a single mom with two kids and I get to make my own choices of what I want to do. And I think that that was a huge mind thing for me to be like, I don't actually want to do what you're telling me to do. And I'm an independent adult from you now. And I think that almost separation from having my mom, like I got married when I was 17, I moved into state, like I didn't have that anymore, that I was able to stand up and have my own self-beliefs.
And how did your parents feel about that?
I think my mom's always, so my dad's not a Jehovah's Witness.
Okay.
And my dad is prevalent on my social media and he is like the typical Aussie bogan. So 4 p.m. shardy o'clock every single day, surfs, definitely not a Jehovah's Witness. Like, no.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was
No, Davo is not a Jehovah's Witness. And my mum is the Jehovah's Witness side. My dad is not. So that was also like a massive thing growing up because my dad was total opposite.
Yeah.
My dad, like, trying not to get him in trouble, but he's not in any way, shape, or form.
Did he want to like celebrate Christmas?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And he would like, he did bad shit. Like he's naughty. So he is definitely not a Jehovah's Witness. And then you got my mom who never swears, never raises her voice. Like, very different. Chalk and cheese. Yeah.
And so your mom, did she have like some reservations with you not doing
she still
she
does
wanted.
Now. She still sends me Bible quotes nearly every day. So,
and
you can imagine my mum like listening to my podcasts and stuff.
Oh my gosh.
Like
so much sex talk.
Not even the sex talk though. It's just, so my mum was always very open with our bodies. Like even to date now, if I went and stayed at my mum's house, my mum would happily stand naked in front of me. She has a very good body image. And I think that's probably why I'm very confident in my body image now, because my mum taught me that. So she would still have that same period talk. She would still talk about things like that in front of us very openly.
Okay.
It's more, I think for like from my mum's perspective, it's more the fact that I'm raising my children in the world.
Okay.
As in they are not going, they're not living life by the Bible. I swear. There's so many different elements that she would be more upset about, I think.
Okay, I see. My mum doesn't like the I swear either.
No.
Every time.
Yeah.
I can see her like queasy every time I swear. It's like, get over it.
And your favourite swear word is fuck.
Yeah,
so, well.
Exactly. So I grew up Catholic. So like very, my dad is not Catholic. So I had a similar kind of thing where it's like mum was, dad's not religious. And like a really, my family's from Ireland and England. So like very steeped in that Catholic upbringing, I guess, to the point where like we have essentially feel like family members who are priests and nuns. Like we have like a family priest who does like all of our weddings, baptisms, funerals, like they've done everything for us. And so like they're part of our family. So a very big like Catholic vibe. And I know that that did sort of impact my relationship with sex growing up because I was taught like it's one person. It's only when married. Like and you, and that I know that I had sex later in life because I was like had all these like.
You were going to die if you have sex.
Yeah. Like I wasn't like some 14-year-old getting out there because I was like, oh my God, you know, so it was like, I know that that for me was something was, did that impact you with your relationship with sex and also like getting married so young?
100%. And whenever I share that I got married at 17 online, everybody is like, what the hell? But we had a, like a friendship group growing up that were all Jehovah's Witnesses. And of that friendship group, every single one of us was married before we were 20.
Wow.
So it wasn't something that was uncommon in my circles. Everybody was married. The difference is they are still married and I am not. I just went like, I guess my first marriage for me was so different. He's, I have to be very careful about what I say in regards to him because he's not here and it's also his journey of, but he has a job and a career that
and
I can't
have his witness.
No.
Oh, no.
I can't post about him on social media based on his career, but he lives overseas and has a job where I never saw him.
Okay.
So in the 3 years that we were married, I saw him three times. And like when I fell pregnant with Ryder, I had sex once. So do you know how shit that feels to literally like have
this success right there?
Oh yeah. So they have leave for a week, basically in an 8 month stint, they get a week leave and he'd come home and I had sex once.
Oh my God.
And literally, so finding out that I was pregnant again, I was just like, no, 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 this one doesn't sleep. I don't want this one. And yeah, it just wasn't a marriage. Like he wasn't home. So for me that there's so many people that say to me like, oh, I can't believe you've got married at 17 and divorced already. Like it wasn't even a marriage. He wasn't here to have a marriage.
And was that whole like, I don't know about the whole Jehovah's Witness, is it like not having sex before marriage? Is that part of, and so was that one of the, is that why a lot of people in your community were getting married younger?
100%.
All right. So on your podcast, one thing that you've spoken very openly about and that I was like, oh, that's interesting. So I've mentioned the intro that Sophie has a podcast.
I'm scared what's coming.
You said that you masturbated for the first time when you were 30, right?
Thanks.
Which like I get, you said it on your podcast. Yeah, right? No. It's already out there. I'm not outing you anyway. And you've done like numerous episodes talking about sex, porn, and a lot around like the double standard of women being called sluts and things like that. Because
huge.
Like there's this whole thing where I think that, especially with like, you know, we see it a lot on reality TV, and like you see it, I'm just on Love Island even, men are praised the higher their number is, and then women are judged for not being the marrying type, the bigger their number is. So the lower ours is, the more impressive, the higher theirs is better. And like that double standard is ridiculous. And so at what point did you, your like sexual empowerment journey kind of start for you?
Well, I think at 30. So as you said, I hadn't ever even masturbated until 30. And I think there's a few different reasons for that. Obviously having my boys so close together, being a single mum, working two jobs, it just wasn't something that was crossing my mind. I just was low libido. I was tired. It just wasn't even like a thing for me. Then I got married to Nath, and Nath and I really valued sexual connection, and something that I put out there very publicly is that we had sex every day. And that's something that so many people are like, you went from having sex every day to being divorced. How did that even happen? Which is huge. Massive, massive, massive thing. So I think at 30 when Nath and I split, that I was like, okay, it's time for me to actually explore myself.
You're like, I'm used to having sex every day, so now I need to figure out.
It was actually more the shame thing for me. So at 30, I was single. I'd just gotten out of my marriage and I had heard about yoni mapping. And I did an episode on my podcast about yoni mapping, but I had never even, I didn't even know my anatomy. And so it wasn't until I went and saw her that I actually even understood about my vagina, my vulva, all of the yoni in regards to how it works, the anatomy of it. And so when I went and had that session, then I masturbated because I was like, I didn't even know what to do. And if you really want the horrific story, this is like...
You want to tell it?
This is so embarrassing. Like... I literally want to just like crawl in a ball as I say this.
Can't see you next week, Courtney. Can we edit this
out? I might edit this out. Okay. So my best friend owns an online adult store. And anyway, so I got this vibrator and got really drunk one night. And I was like, tonight is the night I am going to masturbate for the first time.
You had to get drunk.
This is so bad. Anyway, went from the BPAV home. Woke up the next morning and I swear to God, Court, this is so bad. I couldn't walk. So what I had done is just like ran myself stupid with this vibrator and I walked into Tessa's, like, because Tessa was living with me and I was like, babe, I don't know what I've done. I was crying. I was like, I'm in so much pain. Like, I have to go to the doctor. And she was like, so what did you do? And I was like, I don't know. I just like
put it in.
Anyway, she was like, what do you mean? She had to go to the chemist for me and she walked in and the lady was like, oh, so what does your friend feel? So Tessa's like, I literally went in there for you to get you medication and they thought it was me. I couldn't sit down. Anyway, we got home. Tessa's like, this is going in the bin, babe. You can use your fingers. Literally threw it in the bin and I've never had a vibrator since
because
I literally hurt myself that bad.
Is it just like a chafing drop? Like what?
No, I just like muscular? Got drunk and rammed myself with a vibrator. Like who does that?
Oh my
gosh. So anyway, so I don't have a vibrator anymore. I watched porn for the first time at 30. I think it was more the shame cycle for me in regards to it. And then being married for so long, like Nathan and I were together for like 9 or 11 years or something. Like we had sex every day. We had good sex. Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. It wasn't even like, I don't know, it wasn't a consideration. I didn't need to. Nathan and I didn't spend a lot of time apart unless we were traveling and then it was always for me to do comps or work. So it wasn't something that I was like
in the mood for.
No, yeah. Like I just, and I really deeply loved my connection that I had with him when we were intimate. So it wasn't even a thing for me.
And we've obviously touched on that double standard and I know you've talked a lot about it on your podcast. What are your thoughts on that whole, like, you know, women being deemed as sluts when they have too many sexual partners and, like, how does that play into what you were taught from your religious upbringing and all of that kind of stuff?
It's huge and I always find that I still go back to that judgment.
Yeah.
And it's hard to shift that judgment, but here I am being a woman and standing in my power and saying, like, no, and I think it takes the whole community to actually stop that slut shaming. So whenever we hear in even in the conversations that we have with our friends or girls that you're hearing someone or another woman judge someone, I think it takes all of us to actually stand up and be like, well, no, you're not on that journey. That's not you. Stop judging. But I know that my immediate reaction is to go like, ugh, and I have to talk myself out of it because I know that that's a religious restriction.
Like, yeah. Mm. Well, it's even like I am. You know, I months ago was like looking on the apps or whatever. And my friend was like asking me because I was going on a date or whatever. And she's like, oh, what's your number? And I'm like, what number for what? And she's how many dates before you have sex? And I was like, I don't have any numbers. And she's like, what do you mean? Would you have sex on the first date? I'm like, if I was into it, sure. Like if I want to, why wouldn't I if I'm comfortable? But if I'm not, I will wait. I just don't understand that whole, like, you can only kiss on the first date. Like, if you're into it, do whatever the fuck you want.
Well, I think the other thing for me is, like, I've never dated. I literally end up getting fucking married. So for me, I, like, there's three ways out.
You've been dating a lot lately.
I've been dating a lot lately. I'm here.
But, yeah, it's that crazy thing where it's, like, even women as ourselves, it's like, oh, well, what number or date would you? It's like, who cares what number it is? What's acceptable? Is it 3? Is it 12? Like, when am I allowed to, in the eyes of society, not be seen as like promiscuous? Like, which number?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know, and I don't have the right answer.
There is no answer, is there?
It's no. I think
you should be able to do what your connection is.
Like, yeah.
If you're really into it on the date, do what you want.
Always
be safe.
Safe and consensual.
Yes,
I think that's the biggest things here as well. If you're feeling uncomfortable and pressured on a first date, then no. That's definitely a no.
No, that would be like, I'm out of here. Goodbye.
Bye. See you never.
Yeah, exactly. Don't mess with me. All right. So what tips do you have for women who perhaps are feeling a little bit like sexually repressed, whether it's from like deep-seated negative past stuff to with religion, or maybe they've been put down by partners in the past, like, and they're trying to get more into their like sexual empowerment. What tips do you have for women?
I think, as I mentioned before, my yoni mapping experience, it was, so I've actually gone a few times.
Just explain what the yoni mapping is for listeners.
So essentially she goes through, first you do talk therapy for the first hour in regards to all of your sexual history, your exposure to sex, your exposure to your genitals and how much you know about yourself.
Which you then did, sorry to interrupt you, but no, you did a poll on your Instagram asking many holes they have in their area, genitalia.
Holy fuck.
Wow. Yeah. So many people thought they had two holes.
Yeah. So this was like
there are three holes in case you need to know.
Mind blowing that people didn't know that. Like, so that is alone right there the biggest issue, because if women don't actually know their own anatomy, how are we teaching our future generations? And then how are we supposed to expect our partners to know how to pleasure us or even to be intimate? Because if we don't know what we like, then how are they expected to know? And so yoni mapping as a whole, so you do talk therapy first, education, then she gives you a full body massage, and then she does external and internal mapping where she essentially goes, this is your vulva, this is your clit, this is your G-spot, and she touches it in different ways that stimulate certain areas or I think she calls it erotic analogens. Well, that's definitely not how you pronounce it, but it's definitely wrong.
Look it up, guys.
But yeah, I think you have six. Also probably wrong. She's like, no, you didn't learn anything. But she basically talks you through how your clit likes to be stimulated and how your cervix likes to be touched and how your G-spot likes to be touched and certain things like that that, no, I would never have known. I walked out of that 3 hours mind blown with the education.
3 hours?
3 hours of being fingered by a chook.
Holy moly.
But I walked out of that with more education and experience of myself.
Than your whole biology at school.
Everything in my life to date. Like I just was like, I literally walked out, hopped in my car and was like, everyone needs to know this. Like we need this information. I want my daughters to know this. Like I want my sons to know this. Like this should be common knowledge.
That's amazing. And you've brought up your daughters. What are you or will you teach your daughters regarding like sexual empowerment and their bodies?
I think, as I said just before, safety and consent. That is my two biggest things. And I think that when it comes to the shame or slut shaming or anything in regards to that, as long as there is safety and consent, there is no shame. Shame only hangs out in the shadows. And I don't think there should be any shame when it comes to sex. And we're built for pleasure. Like it's something that you should be more empowered to be able to step into.
Interesting. All right, let's take a bit of a pivot and we'll talk a little bit about dating and heartbreak. So this is something that you have a bit of experience with. And I wanted to, because like, you know, I don't have heaps of experience with this because I'm just like happily single and just
I will just out point out, guys, I have dated three guys in the past 2 years and it's literally as if I am the world's professional dater.
But I think having had
public eye,
I think that the worst heartbreak you can go through in terms of a breakup is a divorce, especially when there's kids involved. So I do feel like given you've been through, I mean, obviously, unless something bad goes in a relationship, I mean, like in terms of just like ending a normal relationship, the hardest one to end typically is when there are kids involved because it takes so much more decision-making process because it's not just you that you're ending a relationship for. And so I think that you probably do have a better understanding of dealing with heartbreak, and you've obviously had some other very hard breakups as well. So that's why I wanted to talk to you, because like I don't have any experience in this. Like I'm bloody useless. I'm just me by myself all the time. So I thought I'll get someone on to talk about it.
That's not a negative. That's not a negative.
So tell us a little bit about, like, obviously you said you've been divorced twice. You know, you've been in those relationships, you were really unhappy in them. I don't know who decided to end those relationships. Obviously we weren't, you know, friends then, so I don't know. But how did you decide that, you know, whoever it was, that I'm ready to move on and we have to do this for ourselves, not just for the kids?
So with Nathan and I, we see it as nothing but a positive. I am so grateful for that man.
And then he's your second husband.
Yeah. He, so first husband, I don't even count as a marriage.
Okay.
Like it's just like he wasn't even here. I don't have anything to do with him. I haven't even heard from him. So we don't have anything to do with him. And with Nath, we see it as nothing but a positive. But I think the thing that most people ask me is, when do you know that it's done? When do you know to walk away? And I think for us, it was that we had given it our all. And a massive thing that I want to say here is that we did 2 years of intense marriage counselling.
Okay.
Where I went and saw Brad once, Nathan went once, and then we went together each week.
Brad's a therapist.
So, yeah, and a relationship coach. And he is the most empowering person for men as well. But we had given it 110%. We had broken up, gotten back together, broken up, gotten back together. He had moved out for 6 months. He'd moved back in. We had given it the biggest possible shot. We had tried absolutely everything. And I realized that I was limiting him as he was doing the same for me. And I would rather us to both be able to go our separate ways on such a positive way. And like, we talk every day, we FaceTime every day. I can honestly say he will forever be in my life in such a beautiful way. And I think that so many relationships go so far that it turns into resentment and bitterness, and you can't come back from that.
Yeah.
And we ended it in a place of nothing but love. And there are so many beautiful memories. And every time I log into my Snapchat memories or Facebook memories of beautiful times that we spent together, and he gave me the safest possible space and environment to grow into the woman that I am today in such a beautiful way.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So what advice do you have for women who might be right now in a relationship where they feel like they've tried everything but they just can't get the courage to make that cut?
As long as it's 100% that is their decision, and not to keep going back and forth. I think that was the hardest thing for both of us, is that like, we both loved each other so much that we would be like, no, let's give it one more shot.
Yeah.
One more shot. Just one more shot. And then we'd be like 3 months into the honeymoon phase of it again and just be like, this is still not working. Like, why isn't this working? And then we'd break each other's heart again. And it just kept going. And I think that that cycle was more of a negative than making a decision. The limbo is what kills us, because we kind of sit there being like, should I leave? Should I stay? Should I leave? Should I stay? When we make a decision, we're actually going in a direction. And I think that's really important, because if we're not going in a direction, we're literally sitting in the limbo phase of unknown. There's no certainty in regards to it. You don't know how you're feeling. If you decide to leave, you can always return and go back. There's nothing saying that the relationship has to end just because you've left. Same in regards, but if you stay, that's the decision. You have to be all in. So, yeah. And I don't even know if that was advice. No. Sorry.
No, I think that's good. How long were you and Nath together for?
Like 11 years, long time.
So a really big one there.
Yeah.
Big stint there.
Big time.
And how do you, like, obviously you've had breakups that maybe haven't been as amicable.
Yeah.
How do you pick yourself, but what are your advice for a broken heart, mending a broken heart and picking yourself back up?
Support. Number one, support. And I think for me, at one stage there when I was literally at rock bottom, I had an EFT coach, a breathwork coach, and was working with a psychologist. And that was each week. And it was just like, I needed everyone around me to rally around me, to build me up, to be able to get forward, because otherwise I was just going to always be. And my retreat system is to hop into bed and hide away from the world.
It covers over the
head. Yeah, I'm not here. Yeah.
So all about support and getting those people. Obviously, 100%. Not everybody is able to go to like all those therapy and things, but there are a lot of online free resources as well.
And if you can't, the other thing is in regards to like micro routines. Get out of bed every day, do what serves you. So whether that's exercise, go to the beach, drink your water, eat your food, all of those other things that we are available, do have access to and have the availability to, and to be able to get out of bed and have that routine.
And how did you know when you were ready to start dating again?
I think for me it was this particular one was just like in my face. I went into a snap lockdown. I was stuck without my kids, and I rarely don't have kids with me. So Nathan and I do fluid parenting or flow parenting, and we kind of make this terminology up. But I've always got either one, four, two. I've always got kids with me. And I was stuck on the Queensland side of the border in a snap lockdown. And the guy that I'm currently dating was living in the same building. So we were both in the
convenient.
So that was how that
I just there in the lift in the morning. I keep going up and down the elevator in my building and just not.
And I was just keep going.
Where I live, it's like a lot of retirees. So
I think when you least expect it, I don't know whether going to look to date is the best way, to be honest. But I always have an ideal partner list as well. And I work through like all of my Flourish and Fulfilled course students. We do this relationship reflection task where we look at our previous relationships, of what we actually were attracted to with our partners, or what we didn't like about them, or what was our favorite memories, moments, and then break it down into qualities, and then break it down further into what we're trying to attract in.
Okay. And dating as a single mum. Tell me about that.
Hard. Dating in the public eye is a lot harder.
I can only imagine.
I think there's so many things that people, like we were talking about before in regards to public perception for our number. It's the same sort of thing. Everyone's going to have an opinion on it. And I think for me, it's about having those connections, the moments in time.
And do you say to a guy, I have four kids straight away? At what point are you saying this?
Well, so I've only dated three guys. You literally named them. This is my number. Literally though. And then I get fucking gossip pages putting my three guys next to each other. I was like, that's in 2 years. My friends do that in a weekend. I'm over here.
But still, it's a conversation. At some point you have to say, I have four children, right? I'm just asking, do you say that?
I think for me, it's a positive. So many people would see that as a negative. So if a guy was like, ugh, I'd be like, what's wrong with you?
Like baggage. Like, my kids are not baggage.
Nah, they're mad dogs. I love them. I literally I had the best fun with them. So I think for me, it's all about the way that I am as a parent as well. I have the best time with my kids. I genuinely love them. I love spending time with them. I love going surfing with them. I want to do everything with them. So for me, it's more of a positive than a negative. Like, if you get me, you get these guys too. It's I don't know. I think it's a positive.
That's nice. That's a nice way to think of it. But also I think it's it's for some people, it's not for some others. And
in saying that, if I had a 6-month-old at home and a 2-year-old at home, that's a different story for me personally. Like, that's hard. And I'm out of the thick of it.
When you started dating Nathan, you actually had quite young kids.
Two
at that
and
point,
three.
Right? Yeah. 100%. So how was that then when you met him?
So Nathan is like a whole nother kettle of fish. I still remember. So I actually trained in the gym in Adelaide with Nate's dad.
Oh.
Yeah. And Nate's dad said to me that Nathan has wanted kids since he was 14 and he was surprised that he hadn't knocked someone up beforehand. Nathan's entire goal in life was to have babies. That's all he wanted.
Wow.
He wanted to be a dad and he wanted to settle down and he would be happy if that's all he ever does.
Wow, I cannot relate.
So very, very
And was that you? Was your goal in life to have babies?
Yep. At the time, 100%. And I think now if I could go back and talk to my 17-year-old self, it would be dude, you have a whole fucking life out there. Go and explore the world. Go and
don't
do things.
Get pregnant when you lose your virginity.
Yeah. That was me. But essentially, though, the thing is, though, there's nothing I would change.
Yeah.
Having Kai and having the relationship that I have with him is just so beautiful.
Because the age is a bit closer. Is that what you mean?
We've just grown together. Yeah. And we just have the most magical relationship because we've always had each other. I've always had him.
It's like Gilmore Girls vibes.
Yeah, yeah. And I've always had someone to care for. I've never been on my own. I've always had to care for him. I've always been a mum. It's all I've ever known.
Okay, so what advice do you have for single mums who are terrified of getting back in the dating pool because they feel like they're scared to say they have kids because men will see it as potentially baggage?
If anyone ever thought of it as baggage, you don't want to be with them anyway. So I think that, and it's similar to having friendships, find your people and make sure that they're aligned with you. Anyone that sees your children as baggage is not for you. There is definitely someone out there for you. There are so many people out there.
Let's talk a little bit more about sort of things that you've been talking about in your podcast lately. So recently you did an episode all around domestic violence and you were very passionate about raising awareness and raising money for Rise Up Australia. So I just want to hit you guys with some statistics around domestic violence in Australia. So 1 in 3 women will experience physical violence since the age of 15. On average, one woman a week is murdered by her current or former partner. 1 in 5 Australian women will experience sexual violence since the age of 15 and 1 in 4 Australian women have experienced physical or sexual violence by a current or former intimate partner by the age of 15. Since the age of 15. Horrific, horrific stats, but also just shows it's fucking commonplace.
Disgusting.
Disgusting.
Disgusting. 1 in 3.
And you obviously want to bring a lot of awareness to this topic. And why is that something that you were really passionate about?
I think everybody needs to be passionate about it, to be perfectly honest. And I think that there's not enough awareness about it. And I think that every single woman that I know has had somebody close to them experience domestic violence. And I think there is a horrific stigma in regards to domestic violence, and it takes a whole community to change this. And I think it comes down to even the jokes that we share within partners, relationships, friends, everyone. The way that we raise our children, I think it's something that is huge and needs to be addressed more of.
Definitely. And there's this whole narrative of like, why did you stay?
Yeah.
And I think that it's so hard for people to, like, I personally have never, thankfully, experienced any domestic violence, but I can understand how it's so difficult when you're in that environment. It's not as simple as just like, oh, he touched me, I'm out of here. And it's never, nothing is black and white. I can't understand why people would think like, well, it's her own fault. Like, she just should have left.
There's a TV series called You Can't Ask That, and it's season 4, episode 1.
Oh.
And
the girl who doesn't watch TV, very specific.
Because this episode is like, I'm definitely, I hope this is going to have a trigger warning on it, but this is horrific. And it goes through that, and it asks 8 different domestic violence survivors why they stayed. And these survivors are, I don't like the term survivors. I don't even know. Yeah, these people were from every single background. So you have somebody who was abused by their dad, somebody that was abused in a gay partnership, somebody that was abused by their partner, somebody that had their children murdered in front of them, right through to a lady who is now in a wheelchair, like incomprehensible. And it goes through all of these questions that you listen to as they ask. And one of those questions is, why did you stay? And the scary thing is that no matter what the circumstances were, every single situation was the exact same narrative. And it's so relatable because it's a mind fuck of why you stay. And it's not just the physical element, but it's also the mental element of why you stay. So it's a good episode to watch.
That sounds very educational. People go check that. I'll put that in the show notes so people can find that. But that sounds interesting. Yeah, I'm definitely going to have somebody else that's like obviously more in that space that's going to come on and talk about this, because my best friend actually has worked in domestic violence for years and years and years, and just some of the things that she tells me, it's just like I can't even like comprehend. And then it's also that there's so much shame for women around this topic. And even like with things like you see these, you know, like women who get raped or sexually assaulted, how they don't press charges because they get told that they're the slut and they shouldn't have worn the short skirt, they shouldn't have got drunk. Like, it doesn't matter if I'm paralytic, naked on the floor, nobody should fucking touch me.
No.
Like, but it's like that whole thing where it's like, was it my fault? Did I bring it upon myself because I looked sexy? You know what I mean? It's disgusting.
The She Said book, remember?
Yes. Yeah.
Which is, again, that Me Too movement. And that's horrific, so horrific. But it's such a cultural thing. Like, and it's that judgment and that shame. And
it's crazy, isn't it? And
yeah.
I think that we are definitely getting better now with that. It's obviously very slow moving, but that men understanding what consent is, because I think that there was this picture in people's head years ago where it's like a man grabbing a woman in an alley and forcing himself on her, and that's what rape is.
Yeah.
And that it's not the girl's a little bit too drunk to say yes, that's also rape. But men weren't kind of realizing that line. It's like that 13 Reasons Why show where, you know, it kind of shows you the grey area, and it shouldn't be grey at all, but how society has kind of taught us that there's a little bit of an area there. And so
I think culturally we realised about 2 years ago that the whole, as a collective, Australia is fucked, when our AFL system had to actually start doing an entire program of what consent actually is.
It needs to be taught in schools.
Yeah. The way that I teach consent with my daughters is tickling.
Okay.
So consent starts at a very young age. Do you want to hug old Uncle fucking Jeff that you feel icky vibes off? If you don't want to hug him, don't hug him. I'm not going to make my kids ever touch someone they don't want to touch.
I saw this actually on a TikTok ages ago about a mum saying that it started from the beginning. If she didn't want to kiss her uncles goodbye or whatever, then she didn't have to.
And I think media has taken this massively out of context in regards to asking for permission to change your nappy. So that's not what I'm talking about.
How do you ask like a...
Well, no, and that's why people are like, pro-consent to a child. Yeah. But I think that's the other extreme. That's not what I mean when I say to my daughters, like, you don't have to touch anyone. If you don't want to go and hug someone because they make you feel icky, you don't have to. If you don't want to kiss them on the lips, don't touch them. My thing is that if someone in my household says stop, they never, ever, ever, ever should have to say that again.
Okay.
Okay. So, and that's like, that revs me up with the kids. Yeah. So number one is like, if they say stop, you stop. No matter what you're doing, that's one word. Never touch them again.
Love that. Yeah. I mean, even like obviously not around someone being icky or anything like that. But for me, I feel like it is a sexism issue because when we're around my family, every Christmas or every family gathering or whatever, when we're leaving, I have to go around and kiss every single person and hug them goodbye, whereas my brother gets to shake everyone's hands.
Yes.
And it used to make me, it still does. I'm like, why the fuck does, I'm not a hugger. You know what I mean? It's like, why does Sam get to shake everyone? Or when you meet someone for the first time, I put my hand out and people look at me like, that's weird from a woman. It's like, why do I have to touch you?
I don't want to kiss you.
Yeah.
No, you shouldn't. You should do whatever the fuck you want.
It's just funny because it's like that standard where girls are taught to like be able to be open with being touched in by their body and men are able to set boundaries and that's what's acceptable.
Yeah. No, 100%. And so like with tickling, mostly if you tickle someone, and like this is how we teach it in the house with the kids, is that if you tickle the girls and they're like, stop. Don't touch them. If I heard the boys tickling after they said stop, I'd send them straight to their room. Like it would just be a nah.
So you are teaching the boys consent without it
being a sexual thing.
Exactly. Yeah. So they are aware. All right, let's pivot a little bit because I know you touched on it and you were like dating in the public eye. I can't not ask you about it because that's obviously what a lot of people would know of you from as well because I think that you – obviously a lot of people on social media know you, but I think that people who don't necessarily know you on social media recently knew you differently because of the media – just flat out the Daily Mail stalking you and your relationships. Talk me through that.
Yeah, horrific. I haven't spoken about it and I think you're the only person that I would speak to about it. So I wouldn't have even called it a date. I went to coffee with someone. Within 3 hours, it was common knowledge all over the internet that I was there with that person.
So just so everyone knows, it was someone who was notable in the media as well that you were out with.
And it was just hectic. I had paparazzi waiting out the front of my house. I had to put paper on my front door because they were taking photos through my house. I
remember you telling me I'm going on this date with this guy and then I saw it like it, online.
3 hours later.
I was like, what the fuck? I thought she said it was her first date. What's going on here?
Like 3 hours later. So then I felt like the control had been taken out of my hands and I had to address it. So I almost felt bullied into having to address this before I was even ready to address it because I didn't know where this
rumors was. The rumour circulating.
And then everyone gossiping and talking about me behind my back when I was just like, okay, I would rather you hear it from me than you hear it from Daily Mail because it's a fucking Daily Fail. That's what it is. And the shit that they come up with is so far from the truth. And the amount of shit they spun and the amount of lies that they produce and the fact that journalists are allowed to write whatever the hell they want is so unfair. And there's no repercussions. Most of what was in every single one of those articles is absolute bullshit. And I think the best thing for me was to take the high road and say nothing, bite my tongue, get through it with my family and move on.
This is obviously when you had the breakup. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Dating in the public eye though. And as I say before, I've literally dated 3 people in 2 years since Nathan and I have broken up. Every single one of them at some stage has been public. And I think for me, I now would rather post something on my story that I am here with this person than always be sitting there in fear that people are taking photos of me behind my back because that's how it feels now and that I'm doing something wrong or that Daily Mail are going to write an article that I'm seeing this person and I'd rather it come from me.
It's a bit like the Taylor Swift effect, right, where it was like she dated like a few guys and she got labelled as this girl who like gets it.
I was called a man-eater and literally Nathan, so Nathan like – I was raised a fucking Jehovah's Witness to man eater. So Nate messaged me and he's like, how's the man eater going today? I was like, shut up. Like, and he's like, yeah, man eater. Like, it was like this massive joke because I was labeled a man eater. My friends who aren't in the public eye are literally having sex with more people in a week than I've had sex with my whole life. Like, and I'm not.
They're not being labeled anything because no one can see it.
No, but it's also, they're not only not being labeled as that, they are all doing it. And that is what is a 30-year-old single consensually, safely having sex doing. And here I am going out to dinner once and being labelled this man-eater from other women online, which is the worst thing about it. Like, that's what's fueling the whole slut shaming.
It's not men, it's women.
Yes, definitely it is women.
That's horrible. And I find that interesting that you raised that, because I will say, like, I did a question box and I see in your like your name come up in fucking Facebook influencer hater groups and all that kind of stuff. And one of the things people say is like, she whinges about wanting to be private and then she puts the guy she's dating online straight away. So I found that really interesting, because you've almost answered that question. Yeah. Where it's like, I put it up straight away so that I'm in control of the narrative.
Yeah, because, and this is the thing, right? Like, I am dating at the moment, and I literally, we would run together and we would be running along Burley, and every single time someone would turn back and look at me, I'd be like, fuck, I have a matter of hours before this is put everywhere. Like, and that was how it, that's how it not only felt, but how it actually is. So unless I actually am like going for a run, someone else is going to take a photo and post it. And it's shit, because it does feel like my reality is definitely put online. But also I want to kind of normalize that the dating process is getting to know someone, and you don't have to date someone and fucking marry them. You can date someone.
Is that you telling yourself that? Or?
Almost. Self-reflection, here's a mirror. But you can date someone, and there's a selection process in that.
And you could be dating multiple people if you wanted to.
And the whole thing about dating is figuring out if you actually want to spend more time with them. And that's the problem, I think, with the public eye, is that if you date someone and you're in the public eye and you're not dating them anymore, what happened? There must have been such a big thing. There must be massive issues. Like, you can actually date someone and be like, meh. They're not for me.
Yeah.
Or you can date multiple people and be like, oh, I want this, or we're doing this. And that's the whole thing about that dating phase, is you don't actually have to date them and marry them.
And I think that the minute it's on social media, people put weight in a relationship. Like, it must be really important if she's willing to put him online,
yeah,
that kind of thing. So it seems like it escalates the level your relationship's at just by it being online. Do you have to say to, you know, for your the new man in your life, did you tell him, hey, well, dating me means this?
His career is also another one, which is he's actually asked me not to put his career online. And so Daily Mail, first article, put his career online. And that put him in the shit.
And so how did he feel about that?
Shit. And that was a big negative for him. It wasn't the kids. It wasn't anything else. It was the fact that dating me meant public eye. And that's his biggest con when it comes to me. And I like the fact he's not after followers and he's not after public image, because I know he's not. He's on private. He shies away from the media. He doesn't like that. But that's also a massive negative for him. That even he went for a run on Saturday. And he, like, it was 10 kilometres, had no shirt on. Within a matter of 10 minutes, I had chicks messaging me being like, just letting you know your man's running topless in Burley. And I was like, number one.
What?
He's got a fucking sick rig, so enjoy. Number two.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Number two, I know. I literally am waiting at the beach. Like, it's so hard for him to get his head around as well, that his every move is now being reported to me.
And so how do you navigate that together?
I think for him it's just like, I keep saying to him, don't read the articles. Do not read the articles. And I think as well, understanding that everyone is going to have an opinion, everyone's going to judge you, and who cares? And I think that I've gotten to a point where I just don't give a fuck what people think about me anymore. And that took a long time to get to that point. I know my truth, and I have enough to back me up in my truth, and I have enough to know who I am and know my morals, my high ground, what I will stand for, what I teach my children, and everybody around me knows that as well, that I just don't care enough. But also he has to, yeah, it's hard. It's very hard for him.
And so,
and this may impact his career, yeah, as well.
So your previous relationships before this year, mm-hmm, or the end of last year, were just the average guy, right? And then obviously you dated someone else who was in the limelight too, which is obviously what escalated it with the press.
Well, so Nathan, like, he's like Mr. Natural Olympia. And when we were dating, there was numerous horrible articles about him as well.
Oh, really?
Horrible. And he is the most quietest, nicest, polite man. And there was horrible articles to say the polar opposite.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And so how is it to, you know, during that period or the period of this earlier one and this year, there was a lot of people on other podcasts talking about your relationship and making assumptions and reading Daily Mail like it was like factual information. How was that to deal with?
I was diagnosed with PTSD, as you know.
Yes.
So shit. It was very shit.
And what does that, what did that mean for you? Like what, how are you willing to, obviously only say what you're willing to say. Like, well, how did that manifest for you? Like, how did you, how did therapists go like, yep, you have PTSD because these are things that are happening?
For 8 days, I couldn't leave the house, didn't sleep.
And this is after the breakup, right?
Yeah. Had nightmares all day, every day, couldn't leave the house.
And were you just getting bombarded with like people's judgment and blaming you for the breakup? And
I think it was more that it was incorrect information. And then me having to just sit tight and listen to things that were so far from the truth. That was the hardest thing.
And how did you, like, you are a very outspoken person who stands up for her beliefs, same as I am. Like, we're opinionated, we're strong women, we stand up for ourselves. How did you put aside your entire personality because you knew having your opinion out there in the public wasn't actually going to help the situation? It could actually feed the beast. How did it feel just to like sit on your hands and not be able to defend yourself?
I didn't. So within 24 hours, I had my mum, Trinity, Tessa, Nicola, every single person close to me flew from Adelaide and moved into my house, took my phone away. And I had a psychologist come every single day.
Smart friends, get that phone away from you.
Yeah.
So you wanted to?
I think there was a part of me that wanted to set the record straight. And then there was a part of me that just was broken. I was just, I just was like, whatever. Like I can't. Yeah.
Yeah. And how did you feel ready to date again after obviously going through such like heartbreak?
I honestly put down my support network to feeling just like, from that place to where I am now is just worlds apart. And like at that point I was on Valium to even function and I had a stutter and I came in here and I tried to record a podcast and I literally like, I couldn't even, my brain and my words couldn't even comprehend. And then I would have these flashbacks and my brain would just go numb and I'd just be like, sick, what do I even do now? And I think for me, it was just like, yeah, probably 3 weeks of hell to, I don't know, yeah, feeling how I do now. Feeling ready to date now.
I think
this person is entirely different. He entirely makes me feel safe and that's my biggest thing in a partner. So I don't know, it's entirely different. It's not even comparable.
And obviously, like, I just want to break it down, like, as well, because obviously I know a lot of people in, like, the influencer space. And one trend at the moment, especially because of all the lockdowns and COVID and all of those things, it's becoming, I'm seeing a lot of, like, it's almost like PTSD with influencers where they're scared to put anything online because you cannot win. And you spoke about this actually in your Insta story yesterday, whether you're for or against. Doesn't even matter if you're like, I like cheese on my sandwiches, someone is going to have something hateful to say to you. And obviously I'm not an influencer. I have a very small following, but even I put up something the other day and I got told that my karma was like my cancer was karma for putting that up on Instagram. It's like, what? What is wrong with you? Like, who says that to somebody? Obviously, like, for me, it's like, that's ridiculous. But that was like a couple of messages that I got of hate. I can't even imagine what it's like to have a large following and to have that constantly. Plus being a mum, because you'd be being mum shamed every 2 seconds. You're also being slut shamed now. Like, there's so many, like, how do you like drown that out and still be who you are and do what you want and not worry about what every person on the internet thinks of you?
I think it's been so many years of that now, which is horrible to even think of, that I'm so desensitized to it. But when I was pregnant with the girls, the amount of women that told me they hope that I have stillborns or that they hope I miscarry because I was working out when I was pregnant.
That as well.
Horrific. That it's just ongoing. It's a part of my life. And I think I'm such a big believer in affirmations and our first words that we read. And if you read something over and over and over and over every single day, you begin to believe it. And I think that's the hardest thing, is segmenting and blocking. So whenever there's a spike in hate, my team will go into my Instagram and delete.
Okay, well, that's a good system.
Yeah, because it's horrific.
And I think it's also, it would be hard. It's the same thing with Emily Sky and the same thing with me. It's like, you're not the kind of influencer who doesn't go into your DMs because you're getting people being so personal yeah. with their stories because you're very vulnerable with your story. I get the same thing, people sharing their cancer stories, their whole life with me, that I feel an obligation that if they're willing to take the time to share that openly with me, that I want to go in and reply.
Yeah.
And you have that with the women that follow you yeah. too. But then that also means there's no way to decipher what was going to be a positive message and what was going to be a death threat.
No. And it's really hard as well when you absorb everyone's messages because it's like, even though I know that I'm not this person or I know that my children don't deserve to die. So I've had people, especially in that horrible breakup that I went through, had people tell me that I don't deserve to have kids. I've had people tell me to go and kill myself. Even yesterday I had someone say to me, like, and it's so not true, but saying that I had affected someone's mental health so badly that I deserved to die. And I was like, if only you knew the fucking truth. Like,
yeah.
So it's hard because it's just like so untrue.
I just don't understand how we've gotten to this point where, like, obviously people that do that are very unhappy.
It's a projection.
I literally cannot even relate to yeah. what, like.
Yeah, it's everything.
It's crazy.
But it is social media, and I think that I do have to understand that it's like I put my life out there and I know that a lot of people won't agree with it, but that's been my whole life. Being raised a Jehovah's Witness, I've always been the weird one. I've never been one that fits in. I've never fitted in because I've always had this segment between everybody and me anyway. So it's kind of no different. I don't know. It's a hard one.
Yeah, it's really hard, isn't it? I think at the moment it does feel like there's so much hate going on. It does feel like we're at sort of a pinnacle where it's like, what's going to happen here? Like, does Facebook step in to do something around the bullying online?
Yeah. It's certainly heightened at the moment when it comes to like everyone online, because I think there's so many lockdowns and everybody is probably on their phones more and they're living vicariously through a lot more people. And
I think there's so much fear at the moment too,
yeah,
and that
agreed.
Brings out an ugly side of people as well.
Yeah. Always radio love.
That they're then projecting that onto others.
And I think for me as well, like, love is the highest frequency, and I'm always just like, I'm such a lover of love and romance that if there was any possible opportunity of having a connection with someone, for me it's just like there's not even a chance. Yeah.
All right, we have a few campfire questions that have been sent in from the listeners. They said, I'm not confident in the bedroom at all. My ex always used to put me down, so I'm scared to have sex with the lights on. I don't want to try new things. Help.
Yeah, okay. So I think that not having sex with the lights on is a big one in regards to your own self-esteem and self-confidence. And I think that when we actually stand in front of the mirror naked and accept exactly who we are and who we're here to be, that will really help you. The other thing that I kind of find interesting is that usually the things that we don't like about us, our partners love the most. And kind of the other big thing to that is, correct me if I'm wrong, because maybe I am, being into it and actually enjoying it, being present in the moment, is more of a turn on than how you look.
Yeah, confidence is what's sexy.
Yeah.
The conversations I've had with men is they're just like excited to have sex. They just don't even really care about all the other things, literally. All right, my ex and I recently broke up. He broke my heart, but we have a toddler together. How do you move on when you still have to see them all the time?
I think being able to reflect on the relationship in a positive light and knowing that you guys shared such a beautiful experience of being able to have a child together, I think helps the situation. I think if you're somebody that's struggling to move on, perhaps limit the contact to only being about kids, even if it is for the first couple of months or weeks. And always make sure that you're not spiteful or trying to hurt or make jealous to the other person.
How do you know if you've given your relationship everything you have and it's time to say goodbye? I don't want to give up too early.
Yeah, I think as long as you can personally, hand on your heart, walk away and know that you've 100% given it your all, then that's all you can really do.
All right, one last question. I've allowed it. I know that, like, I wasn't going to.
Oh,
but
God.
There's a lot of nutrition questions and it's off-brand for me, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Okay, tips when you're trying to eat healthy but you have to cook a different meal for your husband and your kids and they're eating unhealthy but you want to eat healthy. How do you, like, cook those different meals for the family and you stay on track?
I am such a big one of not cooking different meals.
Okay.
And that's huge for me, especially given that I did competition, like fitness competition. So most people would prep for a fitness competition and eat a different meal to the rest of their family. And that to me was so unhealthy that I wanted everyone to eat the same thing. And that's kind of where the flexible dieting thing came in for me. My kids eat the same food that I do.
And do you do it like maybe you'll just have a different portion size or less like carbs on yours and the boys can have more carbs because they're growing and whatever?
Yeah, so usually it's the protein that I try and focus on is that our bodies work on lean protein mass. And so like for somebody like Nathan, he would have double the servings that I would have and the boys would have half. That's what I'd kind of usually base that on.
Right. All right. So we've got a few segments that I do at the end of my podcast and we finish on what is the one takeaway you want? We've talked about a lot of topics today.
Oh, God.
What is the one takeaway you want a listener to go away from today?
I think to be kind online, I think is a massive one. And I think that remembering that I am just human, I am doing the best I can. I'm definitely not here to annoy anyone. I'm just living my life the best I can.
Love that. Be kind.
Yeah.
That's nice. All right. What gets you fired up, Sophie Guidolin?
I think judgment on any scale. I feel like every single one of us is living our own journey and you can't judge someone else's journey because you're not living it.
That's a really good one. I like that. And I do feel like you are one of the people I know that is like really free of judgment. Like
I don't judge anyone.
You, like I feel like I could say anything to you. You'd be like, cool.
I think it's massive. Like, I don't know what you're going through. Yeah. I don't know what your life looks like.
And I think that's also probably part of being like, you're very empathetic as well. Yeah. So I think that probably ties hand in hand too. All right. I always draw I call mine rapid fire questions. You have fire questions. That's so funny in your podcast.
Okay.
So take one of these, read it out and we'll both answer it.
Name one movie that had a big impact on your life. Mine is The Blind Side. I think because like Sandra Bullock literally adopts him and just takes a chance and I would do that. I would literally adopt everyone if I could.
You actually would.
I would. I would literally have 17 kids living at my house. But I usually do. My house is like the drop-in center for all the kids.
Okay. Mine would be What Women Want, which was like a movie about like advertising. And I became like really obsessed with having a job in like marketing, advertising, like creative side of things. And so it's kind of influenced like where I've headed in my life, I guess. That would be my one. All right, Sophie, what is your attitude of gratitude? What are you grateful for today?
My health, massively. You've known I had a lump removed 7 weeks ago that very likely could have been breast cancer that wasn't. And I'm so grateful. And every single day since that, have just walked away being like, thank fuck. And yeah. And especially going through that the same time as you has been really, really eye opening. So yeah, I'm grateful for my health.
Before we go, I just wanted to let you know that I also did a podcast over on Sophie's podcast, which is Flourish and Filled, talking all about like the cancer journey. So if you want to go check that out, but where can everybody find you, Sophie?
Well, my Instagram is Sophie_Guidolin. So it is SophieGuidolin. Whenever I say my name, I literally just start spelling it because it is such a shitty last name, but Guidolin.
Is that, whose surname is that?
The boy's dad.
Okay. I was just
I know. It's just that, like.
What is your maiden name?
Watson. So I went from having.
It's a lot easier.
I know. I'm well aware.
Aware. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Nice having you. All right. Let's finish up with the thought of the week. This one is from Naomi Wolf. If a woman loves her own body, she doesn't grudge what other women do with theirs. She loves femaleness. She champions its rights. Love that. All right. Thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode. I'll be back next week with a new ep. But in the meantime, remember to love and protect the skin you're in. Follow me on Instagram @CourtneyMangan and @SheWasTheFire. Subscribe and share. Bye.